We have a big announcement today, Avi. Next Thursday from noon to 1, that's March 14th, a week from today, Studio 2 will be broadcasting live from the Museum of the American Revolution right here in Old City, Philadelphia. And we want you to join us.
We'll be talking with expert historians about the revolution, and we have a limited number of tickets to give away. Email studio2@whyy.org with your name and phone number if you can join us. That's Thursday, March 14th, email studio2@whyy.org.
Welcome to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. You are listening to Studio 2 on WHYY 90.9. Thanks for joining us on this Thursday. So, Cherry, you might have heard.
Yes.
On Sunday, it's the 96th Academy Awards, often known as the Oscars.
Big day in Hollywood.
Big day in Hollywood.
And we're going to be talking about it.
An excuse to talk about the year in cinema. Do you watch the Oscars, by the way?
I do. I tend to watch it most years. Yeah, not the whole thing.
Is it your favorite award show to watch, or where would you rank it? I don't watch any of them. I
watch that in the Grammys.
And the Grammys. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yeah, it's one of my faves because you get to see all the actors you love and
so you're what I'm hearing is you're a Golden Globes hater. You hate the Golden Globes.
Yeah, I really don't watch the Golden Globes too much. It has to be a big deal or some kind of controversy for me to tune in. But I do watch the Oscars, yes. And we get to talk about it today.
We get to talk about it today. And we want to hear, folks, what movies you liked last year.
Yeah.
Or which ones you didn't like last year.
Who got snubbed?
Who got snubbed? Or maybe who got honored who shouldn't have? Studio2@whyy.org. That is our email address. 888-477-9499.
And
we're also going to talk with Nicholas O'Rourke, who is a newly minted city council member here in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking with Councilmember O'Rourke because he is giving the progressive response to the State of the Union address tonight. This is an honor that has often gone to Democrats associated with the left wing of the party, including some pretty big names, some U.S. reps.
Yeah.
O'Rourke is a member of the Working Families Party who got a spot on council because of the strange alignment of how Philadelphia City Council is elected.
Yeah.
And now the two spots on City Council that are designated for the non-majority party
have gone to
the Working Families Party,
mm-hmm.
and O'Rourke is one of those council members. So we'll hear what he has to say.
Yeah, and it says a lot about Philly, and it says a lot about the importance of Pennsylvania in the 2024 general. So looking forward to hearing from him later today. But our big story, we're going to jump into the news, Avi?
Let's jump into the news.
All right. The big story, we've been talking about this for the past few days, not on the show, but just in the city, is safety on SEPTA. Philadelphia police, they're planning to crack down on mass transit after nearly a dozen kids have been hurt just this week in a string of shootings involving SEPTA buses. The latest was a mass shooting on Wednesday where 8 kids between the ages of 15 and 17 suffered injuries. 30 shots, Avi, were fired. It happened just before 3 p.m. All the kids were leaving Northeast High School, and one of the victims, a 16-year-old boy, he was shot 9 times and has been taken to the hospital. He's in critical condition. This made national news, and because we had another shooting on Monday involving students from Imhotep Charter High School where a 17-year-old was shot and killed while boarding a bus. The mayor, Sherelle Parker, she was on television. She says she's pulling together a coalition of partners to tackle this issue.
You need to know that we are going to do everything that we can to ensure your public health and safety. And we don't apologize for using every legal and constitutional tool in our tool belts in order to get that done.
And she's talking about her office, the police, schools, ATF, DA's office, SEPTA police, the city's public safety and anti-violence office. All of these folks are going to come together. They're going to do SEPTA checks where PPD boards buses. They're going to look around. They're going to be cracking down.
Yeah, I do think that shootings that happen on public transit, near public transit, puncture the community's sense of safety in a way that maybe other shootings don't. We're seeing the same phenomenon playing out right now in New York City, where they're calling in the National Guard to crack down on the sort of a perceived uptick in violence on the subway system. So this is something that obviously local officials take very, very, very seriously. Of course, remains to be seen whether this will have any impact whatsoever.
Yeah. And I feel bad for the parents who have to send their kids to school using transit. I mean, generally, it's not, shootings don't always happen. But when you hear about it, especially just while kids are leaving school or going to school or going to a game or leaving a game or something like that, or just living life, it is very scary. By the way, Northeast High School, where the shooting happened on Wednesday, they're on a virtual schedule just to give kids a break and just sort of deal with the trauma of this, because it's not just the families who are actually dealing with the victims. It's everybody in the whole school community that gets traumatized when something like this happens.
Yeah, faith in public transit, faith in public spaces is the glue that holds the city together.
Yeah.
So you do... I'm not saying this is the right way to do it, but I understand why city officials really want to restore that faith, because I do think it keeps sort of society together.
It does.
Okay, our next story is a little complicated. I'm going to walk you through it.
Walk us through.
Okay. The William Way Center is a nonprofit. It's a hub for Philly's LGBTQ community. It's located in Center City. This nonprofit was hoping to get $1 million from the federal government to aid a larger renovation project. The center also, unrelatedly, happens to rent space to a group called Aviary once a month, which holds what they call kink and fetish parties. There's no actual sex at these parties, but that's sort of, I guess, the theme, the topic. Anyways, when this appropriation request was made by the William Way Center, some right-wingers online, specifically this account Libs of TikTok, seized on the fact that the William Way Center was renting space to this group once a month, and they publicized it widely, and it led to this big backlash. And then after that, U.S. senators from Pennsylvania, John Fetterman and Bob Casey, pulled support for this $1 million funding proposal to the William Way Center in Philadelphia. Casey defended the decision, said, you know, this was the right thing to do. Fetterman was all over the place. He first said he didn't even know that his office had proposed pulling the funding. And then he sort of later said it was a strategic move because Republicans were going to strip the funding anyway, and he wants to try again next year. So, another flare up in the culture wars over this seemingly innocuous, proposal for a grant.
Yeah, it did surprise me that our senators pulled support so quickly. For just, some social media posts from, just trolley type folks.
Claim that wasn't what influenced them to do it, but of course they're going to say that. They're going to say,
The proximity, the timing is curious there. And I will say that, Chris Bartlett, who runs the William Way Center has said that no sexual activity happens during that, and that this group Aviary follows the code of conduct. So, and that this group supports communities within the LGBTQ space that need support. So, yeah, it seems like there was nothing strange going on here, just other than, just trying to stir up the pot.
I don't get it at all. Like, I'm not making a political point. Like, I legitimately don't understand what the complaint is. Maybe someone can, I'm not an expert in kink.
Email,
so,
studio
so I, maybe there's something I'm missing here, but if a community center held dances where teenagers like grinded up on each other, how would that be different than this? I don't understand. Like, just because there's like a sexual implication in the event, I'm like legitimately confused.
Yeah.
The only thing I can think of is that this topic is historically associated with the LGBTQ community, and therefore it is now a target. Like, I really don't understand.
Yeah.
And I'm saying this from genuine place of not understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't get what makes this unusual or provocative.
Yeah, I'm thinking we're going to hear more about this in the future. Yeah. So moving on, because I don't understand either, but I'm sure someone will enlighten us at some point. But another story that caught my eye. If you like to speed on the highway and not slow down, specifically when you get to a work zone, take this as a warning. The speed cameras are now activated on highway construction zones in Pennsylvania. Yes, it went into effect on Tuesday. PennDOT and the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission, they started issuing tickets to anyone who drives 11 or more miles over the speed limit in work zones along Pennsylvania highways. The signs are posted, and this rollout comes after a five-year pilot that has shown that speeding 11 miles over the speed limit was reduced by nearly half when the speed cameras were in place. And all of this obvious about saving lives, because in 2022, there were more than 1,200 crashes in work zones, and 14 workers were killed in work zone crashes in Pennsylvania. So,
wow.
Yeah. And the fines are pretty, I mean, they'll give you a warning. So the first time you'll get a warning, the second time, a $75 fine. And after that, you're banged for $150 every single time you speed through a work zone. So be mindful.
I don't have a problem with it.
Pump the brakes, y'all. Okay. Do not just, and it's about saving lives. You don't want to endanger workers.
Also, by the way, when you're speeding, you're not getting there faster. Just FYI. Unless you speed considerably for many, many, many miles consecutively, mm-hmm. you're not getting there faster. And even then, you're shaving off like 5 minutes, and you're not doing anything that 5 minutes anyways. Trust
yeah.
me.
Yeah. So slow down.
Don't speed.
Slow down.
You're fooling yourself into thinking you're getting there faster.
Yeah.
You have been suckered into a psychological trick on yourself when you speed through a work zone. Just know that.
Know that. And remember, these are somebody's family members, brothers, sisters, dads, moms, all that. So slow down.
And don't drink when you drive.
No, definitely don't.
But we are going to talk a little bit about drinking mm-hmm. in our next story. So every year, I like this, the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board releases its annual fiscal report. Sounds very dry.
Does.
But we're going to wetten it up here, okay?
All right.
So in the fiscal report, and this is for fiscal year 23, mm-hmm. the PLCB just releases a bunch of data about what people are drinking in Pennsylvania, so you can find out what types of drinks Pennsylvanians truly
love. So what are they sipping on?
So I'll tell you what they're sipping on.
Mm-hmm.
Top-selling wine in Pennsylvania was something called La Marca Prosecco.
Which is my favorite.
That specific brand?
Yes.
Well, tell me about it.
It's delicious. Well, I like all Prosecco. That's mm-hmm. the drink that I get when I go out.
It's the top-selling wine in Pennsylvania.
But La Marca is delicious, yes.
Yeah. What makes it so delicious?
It just has like a nice little fruit. First of all, the bubbles. But all Prosecco has bubbles. And then it just has like a nice little fruity, like, but it's not, and it's not too sweet.
It claims to have aromas of fresh-picked citrus and honeysuckle blossom. And I think that's what you're picking.
Get that. Yeah, that's a little honeysuckle. Okay. I like that.
Also, Josh Sellers was mm-hmm. well represented on the top wines list, and mm-hmm. Barefoot, well represented on the top wines list. The top selling spirit in Pennsylvania are those little mini Fireball whiskey bottles.
Wow.
You know those like tiny little shot? It's like a shot in a bottle. 4 million of those sold in 1 year in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
But sales of Fireball whiskey, which by the way is terrible, sales are declining. One of the big, like, on the rise spirits in Pennsylvania is something called New Amsterdam Vodka.
Okay.
That's like the new cat on the block. New Amsterdam Vodka, mm-hmm. very popular.
Haven't had that.
Also, people love Tito's Vodka.
I'm a Tito's person.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I ask why again?
I just think it's very, well, I just like vodka, but I like Tito's because it's just very smooth mm-hmm. and it goes with everything.
Well, I also don't quite get why people like vodka. Maybe that's a conversation.
Well, I like it because when you, the next day, if you, you don't sweat. You don't smell it in your pores. And some alcohol, you smell like you were drinking. And with vodka, you don't.
I've never noticed.
I don't like
this.
To smell like I had a drink.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll note that the top fine wine and good spirits store in all of Pennsylvania in terms of sales generated is in South Philadelphia on Washington Avenue, Point Breeze. It's kind of a cheat because it's a wholesaler. But there also is a very, very popular, one of the top selling stores in all of Pennsylvania is elsewhere in South Philly, down by the IKEA. They do $12 million in sales every year. So South Philadelphia is buying a lot of Tito's.
There you go. And our last story in the roundup, you've probably seen a lot of folks with service animals. They're wearing those vests, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But my mind tells me, I bet not all of those animals are really certified service animals.
Okay.
Well,
go ahead, skeptic.
You know, a new bill is being proposed in Delaware that would crack down on fake service animals or the people handling them, and you know who you are. State Senator Dave Lawson introduced legislation to penalize people who misrepresent their pets as service animals. He says more people are trying to pass their pets off by ordering those counterfeit vests online. And Avi, I found one for like $8.99 on Amazon, so I believe it. But if the bill passes, the first violation will be a penalty of $500. And I got to say, shout out to people who have real service animals. They go through rigorous training, hours, and, you know, you just can't, you know, represent that Fido. You know,
I would
regular old Fido or Buffy, who had no training,
Buffy.
Can barely, you know, catch a ball, is a service animal just because you want to bring them in the grocery store.
I wonder genuinely if this legislation ever happened, whether it would make life better or worse for people who have legit service
animals. And I know
we're
going to get mad. People are going to be mad about this.
No, because no. Listen, hear me out. Because if you cast this sort of like net of suspicion over service animals in general,
it might cause problems.
It might cause problems for the people who actually have them if they don't have the documentation on them or whatever. You know what I mean? So I wonder if this is actually helping anything and if there are enough people doing this to even bother passing a law. I mean, this guy, State Senator Dave Lawson, says it's quote unquote on the rise. I have no idea how you could prove
there
that.
There needs to be some hearings about this for sure.
Okay, sure. We could do a hearing. Maybe one hearing.
Get some stats.
President Biden will deliver his State of the Union address to a joint session of Congress at the U.S. Capitol this evening. It's the last time he'll give this speech before his rematch against former President Donald Trump in the upcoming general election. Biden is expected to tout his achievements and address inflation, reproductive rights, immigration, and the war in Gaza.
The national conservative rebuttal, will come from Alabama junior senator Katie Britt and our own Nicholas O'Rourke, Philadelphia City Council member at large. Well, he is set to take the national stage to deliver the progressive response to Biden's remarks. Now, O'Rourke is a member of the Working Families Party. He's a pastor and a community organizer, and he's new to city council this year. His election alongside incumbent Kendra Brooks caused Republicans to not have any at-large council seats for the first time in over 70 years. We spoke with Councilmember O'Rourke ahead of his big speech happening tonight.
Councilmember O'Rourke, what do you hope the president will say in his speech? What do you want to hear from him?
Well, you know, I think we would be remiss if we didn't recognize that the world currently is really reeling as a result, as it relates to what's happening in the Holy Lands, as some would say the Middle East, more particularly Palestine. And so I do think that many are looking for him to give more voice and some action as it relates to that. And so I'd like to hear him speak to that. I also think that there's a lot to be said about what he may or may not be doing as it relates to migration here in the country. I think many folks are have many questions about that. I certainly hope that he takes the time to speak to the great work that he has done heretofore and some of the big bills that he's been able to pass. I think that oftentimes that may get lost as it relates to what the president has done since he has taken office, has taken, at least as it appears to me, very bold approach to advocating for it. The Build Back Better plan, for example, others. These are major bills that were that have become law that I think as the years continue to roll on, we will see the benefits of. And so I think it's to his, you know, it's in his best interest to make sure that people are reminded, you know, lowering the cost of prescription drugs, you know, being able to get the child tax credit extended, right? These are wonderful, wonderful things that really do help us cut at the major issues like poverty, which is obviously a major thing here in the city of Philadelphia. We talk about it every election cycle. And so I think it would be really good to hear that. And it's good for the American populace to be reminded of those things as we're heading into another election.
Do you want the president to call for a ceasefire and the war in Gaza? Is that something you personally want? And is that something that you've heard talked about with the Working Families Party?
Oh, yes and yes. It's something I personally want 1,001%. This is something that many folks have wanted. I think actually the world opinion, I'm using this, you know, obviously it's a bit general I'm speaking, but I'm probably not too far off the mark here. I feel like the world opinion on what is taking place in Palestine, in Gaza, began to really shift, kind of like hit the halfway mark and kind of tilted the other direction around December. And I think in recent weeks, we have heard more and more folks come out about that. I think it was in the last 2 or 3 weeks, I think I heard who I would consider a conservative commentator, Piers Morgan, begin to ask some very serious questions about the continuously rising death toll of women and children. And so, yes, a ceasefire is the least that I think we need. And I do believe that first Vice President Harris, and then recently, as maybe as early as yesterday or today, the president has been giving more voice to a desire for what they are calling a ceasefire, something along the lines of a humanitarian pause for 6 weeks. So, I think that's the bare minimum. Certainly within the Working Families Party, we've been quite vocal about the scale, I should say, of devastation or that we've been seeing, all of us on all of our phones. And so, yeah, that's not something for us that we even think should be considered as controversial. It's a call for peace.
When you talk with progressive voters here in Philadelphia, what do they say the president needs to do to win them over and to make sure they turn out for him in November?
I wouldn't pretend to speak for every single progressive on the planet. I do fancy myself one. I think there's 1,000 different definitions for that. But I can tell you right now that of the traditional working class issues, right, making sure that we are meeting the needs of those who are suffering the most in society, that the hot button issue right now certainly is the president's almost unwavering commitment to supporting the inhumane actions of the current government in the state of Israel. That would be a major piece and would go a long way for those who really do struggle with whether or not to support him in light of a Trump, the potential of a Trump second term. So I really think, you know, not to make it a one issue thing. I do think that folks are, and I think it's, you know, I think we all know that people are more than just one issue voters. But I do think for quote unquote progressives, this is a major thing that we need to see the president change course on.
So, you know, Nicholas, the Working Families Party has made it clear that it opposes former President Donald Trump. At the same time, WFP has not endorsed President Joe Biden. How will you and other progressives balance this being critical of the Biden administration on some parts with the need to support him? Because it seems to me the last thing progressives want is for Trump to win.
That I'm 1,000% with you on that particular point for sure. Right. The MAGA movement is not in any way, shape or form going to make it easier for, you know, I can be as narrow as speaking to progressives, but really anyone who has a humanitarian concern and wishes to govern with a sense of compassion. That's not what the MAGA movement's going to offer us. And Trump's second term certainly won't do that. So, you know, the Working Families Party has an endorsement process. We always have, you know, regardless of what people may or may not say about it, we do go through one. You know, it remains to be seen who the WFP ultimately does endorse in the race. But I can guarantee you it won't be Donald John Trump.
Well, we wish you luck in your progressive response to the State of the Union.
Thank you. I'm gonna need all luck I can get. Appreciate you very much.
That is Philadelphia City Council Member at Large, Nicholas O'Rourke. Coming up, Best Actress, Best Score, Best Film. We are looking ahead to the Academy Awards this weekend. Chime in with your favorite movies of the year, or maybe some movies you really didn't like. Studio2@WHYY.org is our email address. You can also call us now, 888-477-9499. We'll be right back on Studio 2.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I can feel the stress in my body from that one. That is the Oscar-nominated score from Oppenheimer, a contender at this weekend's Academy Awards. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg. That music
Take a breath. Take a breath.
Yeah, it can get into your bones.
Squeeze something. We got, a stress ball or something. Everyone calm down. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. So we have a running joke at the office.
Mm-hmm.
I don't watch movies. I'm not a big movie guy. No judgment. I don't dislike movies. I just don't make a lot of time for them in my day. So I'm really excited to learn about a lot of movies that I haven't really seen from some great guests that we have lined up this hour. And I think you're also going to cover me a little bit too, Jerry.
I am, because
I'm going to be a useful idiot this hour.
Yeah, but you watch a lot of trailers, so you got you got a little bit of something in.
I do like trailers, actually.
Yeah, you
I
do.
I love trailers.
Like, yeah. Because it's a little commitment, short commitment there. I watched some of the nominated films, and we are today joined by a panel of experts here who I know spend a lot of time watching these films. They know the business in and out. With us are Gary Kramer, Philadelphia Gay News and Salon.com film critic. And we also have Philadelphia Inquirer arts and entertainment editor Bedatri Chowdhury. Welcome to Studio 2 to both of you.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you.
All right, movie buffs.
Mm-hmm.
School me. What was your favorite film? Which one stunk? Who's being overlooked? And what did you think of Barbenheimer? Our number is 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org.
And so we talked about how we wanted to do this. And we figured we'd start right here at home and talk about the Philadelphia folks who are nominated for the big Oscars. And Coleman Domingo stood out to me. Excellent job from Philadelphia, Overbrook High School.
Temple grad.
And I just want to take a moment and just play a scene. He's nominated for his acting in Rustin, a Netflix film. And here's this scene featuring Coleman Domingo as Bayard Rustin, also from this area.
Each of us are taught in ways both cunning and cruel that we are inadequate, incomplete. And the easiest way to combat that feeling of not being enough is to find someone we consider less than. Less than because they are poorer than us, or because they are darker than us, or because they desire someone. Our churches and our laws say they should not desire. When we tell ourselves such lies, start to live and believe such lies, we do the work of our oppressors by oppressing ourselves.
Mm. Gary first.
I got goosebumps. I love this performance. It's funny, the Academy always goes for the most acting and not the best acting.
What do you mean by that?
Like the bigger the performance. That's why like Meryl Streep wins all the time.
Are we about to get some anti-Meryl Streep takes here?
I can give you lots
of
them.
Oh, God. Different show. Different show. We don't want to offend all the listeners. Go ahead.
But I love him in this performance. Yeah. And I love Coleman. I mean, he was great in Zola. He was great in Rustin. And he just goes so big in this. And yet you hang on every word. He's moving. I got goosebumps just listening to that clip.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such a shame he's not going to get recognized for this because, you know, it's going to go to Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer.
You're sure about that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which, why?
Because Oppenheimer's got all the heat and it's going to sweep. I mean, Barbenheimer, you know, may have goosed the box office, but this is Oppenheimer is the big prestige film that the Academy loves to recognize. Christopher Nolan's finally going to get his Oscar after 22 years. You know,
I don't know about that.
Oh, wait,
go ahead. Throw it in there.
I mean, I do think Murphy's going to win for Oppenheimer because, again, I agree with Greg that, you know, there's so much acting in not speaking, and that film, like his eyes, like I think the Oscar goes to his eyes at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'm not sure if Nolan's going to win. I mean, he'll probably win given how the business drives the awards, but I'm not sure if that's going to be the most credible or, you know, justified win.
No. The Best Picture and Best Director usually go hand in hand. There are only a handful of, like, maybe 24 occasions in the history of the Oscars where that hasn't happened.
Wow.
Doesn't mean it can't happen again.
No, just saying. And it happened recently. I mean, you know, with Green Book, it won, but the director didn't. And Coda, the film won, but the director didn't. But no, I think Oppenheimer, if you're putting money on this, it's Oppenheimer and Nolan.
This became
for
a betting segment all of a sudden.
I know.
But I just want to go back to Coleman Domingo real quick.
Because we got
to
shout out
because,
our Philly people.
Yeah, from Philly. And of course, the character Bayard Rustin also from the area. And Coleman Domingo has an interesting career, right?
Yes.
He's in his early 50s. Yep. And I would say as recently as 10 years ago, I don't think a lot of
folks
had
very well known.
Heard of him. I mean, what's his rise been like?
I mean, you know, true to Philly style, the underdog. Yes. Of, and you know, it's good that you said 50 because I wouldn't have guessed.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, yeah. But
I think he's crested 50. I'll look that up.
Yeah, yeah, no, he has. Yeah. And he's also made a point to talk about it, that he's one of the older actors. But look at the year he's had. Yeah. It's not just, you know, it's starting from Zola, but his show where, again, Philly played a big role. And Rustin, of course. And Rustin, I think, is very important. It's, we're in Philly, we're talking about Rustin. It's who he is, but what does it stand for? It's about an older gay man, which he is. And then Bayard Rustin did not, I would argue, did not get his due in the way American history is taught and written, because he was black and gay. And I think it is a very important movie, and I'll do a shameless plug here. although it's a very new film, it does appear on the Inquirer's 50 Best Philly Films, which if you haven't checked out,
I did check out that list. Yes,
it is. It did like jump into number 50 this year because of just how amazing and important this film is to the city.
But that was sort of a surprise nomination.
No, not
a surprise. At
I
all.
Saw this film. I saw this film at Telluride back in September of last year, and it was getting like ovations at its premiere. What's interesting is that Coleman and Jodie Foster are two actors both playing gay characters who are gay in real life, and that's they're the only other actors aside from Ian McKellen from Gods and Monsters like 20 years ago that have ever been nominated for playing gay as a gay person.
And by the way, Naiad.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. And I think she's great. I would love to see her win.
Excellent film.
I'd love to see her win. I want her. She's my ride and die. Please.
All right, let's keep it in Philly now. I'm going to play a clip from Maestro, which stars and is directed by, right, Bradley Cooper. Mm-hmm. And he's playing the great Maestro, conductor Leonard Bernstein. Let's roll that clip.
Lenny, what's the big difference in the life of composer Bernstein and conductor Bernstein?
Well, I suppose it's a difference. It's a personality difference which occurs between any composer versus any creator versus any performer. Any performer, whether it's Toscanini or Tallulah Bankhead or whoever it is, leads a kind of public life, an extrovert life, if you will. It's an oversimplified word, but something like that. Whereas a creative person sits alone in this gray studio that you see here and writes all by himself and communicates with the world in a very private way and lives a rather grand inner life rather than a grand outer life.
Okay, that sounds like pretty good acting to me. But what do I know? I do have to bring in a comment from
Hot
Dimitri.
Take over here.
Who says, there's nothing good about Maestro.
No.
Bradley Cooper is desperate for an Oscar, which is totally fine, but it was a paint-by-numbers prestige movie with nothing to say. I mean, say it ain't so, Gary Kramer.
No.
This is Bradley Cooper from Philadelphia here.
I totally agree with that.
Really?
I think it's an Oscar-baiting turn. If Bradley loses on Sunday, and he will, he will have lost 12 times, 12 Oscars for his writing, his directing, and his acting
over
the course of his career.
But that's
like the most losingest actor.
I'm not doing those numbers, but I do agree with Dimitri that it's not a great film.
Why not? Why is it not a great film?
It doesn't talk about Bernstein's Philadelphia years. Okay, let's start there, okay? But now that we have that out of the way, I do think, and I think Greg and I were talking just before the show started, it's a lot of mimicking rather than acting. And I think Carey Mulligan actually does a fantastic job.
Has the nod for Best Actress there.
Yes. Sadly. But again, I think Best Actress is the only, and we can talk about this later, is the only category where it's actually a fight.
Can I just ask something real quick, though?
Because we're talking about nominations, though.
But everyone is good. But this comes
up all the time, that it's Oscar bait, that it was made to get an Oscar. Yeah. First of all, as a non-film guy, like, why is that a bad thing? Like, if an NBA player is going for the championship, you don't say, oh, he was going for the championship. But why is it
he's
bad?
He's putting
the emphasis on the wrong syllable here.
Okay.
Basically, what Cooper's doing is trying to get attention for his role. Look how brave I am. I mean, look at the make. There was so much discussion on the makeup even before the film came out, and that's the only prize it's going to win. It's
Gary.
I'm telling you, it's going to win best.
You guys are the Oscar.
It's going to win best makeup. But the thing is, it's not. I mean, the film isn't really about what it's about. It showcases the performances. It doesn't tell a story. That's why it's bad.
And I also think it tries telling two stories, and neither of it very well. So, I mean, if it was called The Marriage or The Husband, probably a better film.
Well, I just say, I really liked Bradley Cooper in Wet Hot American Summer many years ago, yes. And so I'll stand by him on that one. And I haven't seen Maestro yet, so I can't defend him on that one.
Wow, I have not seen Maestro either, and your takes on it make me not want to. But see, we have three more minutes or so in this segment, so I'm going to talk about our other Philadelphia person, Divine Joy Randolph.
That's where my money is.
Yes. who is nominated for Best Supporting Actress in The Holdovers. Here's a scene from that.
I heard you got stuck with babysitting duty this year. How'd you manage that?
Oh, I don't know. I suppose I failed someone who richly deserved it.
Oh, the Osgood kid? Yeah, he was a real asshole. Rich and dumb, popular combination around here.
It's a plague.
By the way, I went to college in Boston, loved her accent. I thought she was so good. I watched this last night. Your takes, her chances. Okay.
She's going to win.
If I was the betting sort, I would put my money.
Why is she going to win?
Why? Because she's won everything leading up to the Oscars, and rightly so.
Yeah. What's so great about her performance?
Because she's very internal, and then she's got this one big scene in the kitchen, which is sort of phenomenal. I think the film itself is a nothing burger, but a lot of people love it.
Five nominations, though, Gary, for Best Actor, Paul Giamatti, was great.
Paul Giamatti is great. He's also great in Sideways, where he didn't get nominated. I think this is payback for that from 20 years ago. Uh-huh. I don't think it says enough for me, but I think her performance is really great. You feel her pain in every scene she's on screen, and that kitchen scene is devastating.
It's a very short role. It's a very male film. And she just brings this grief, like maternal, and I'm not stereotyping it in like, a weeping mother, but she is such a strong character in this very male
sort of
film.
The glue.
And you feel her when she's not on screen.
And by the way, if you don't know what this film is about, it's about an instructor at a New England prep school who remains on campus during Christmas break to babysit a handful of students. They're called the Holdovers.
Yeah.
And Divine Joy Randolph's character is head of the cafeteria, and she just lost her son, who also had gone to that school.
Yeah, and I think he was a Vietnam veteran.
Yeah. Wow. Yes,
very young Vietnam veteran.
Well, we have to go to a break, but I will say that local filmmaker T. Gray Hill sent us a comment and said that T. Gray really likes The Holdovers, so some disagreement
with T. Gray, so I'm safe from T. Gray's role.
Okay.
Gary's like, it needed to
say
more.
We're sorry, we're giving you a hard time. We're going to talk about this more in a minute. this is a song that's nominated for Original Song by Billie Eilish called What Was I Made For? We're going to break. Back with more Oscars talk on Studio 2.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Now that's more soothing. Mm-hmm. That is the score from American Fiction, also in the running at this weekend's Oscars. Welcome back to Studio 2, everybody. I'm Avi Wolf-Manarin.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. If you are just tuning in with us today for our Academy Awards Roundup, our Bedatri Chowdhury, Philadelphia Inquirer Arts and Entertainment Editor, and Gary Kramer, Philadelphia Gay News and Salon.com Film Critic. And just before the break, we were talking about the holdovers because Philadelphia's own Divine Joy Randolph is nominated
and winning,
and you all predict that she will win.
I don't even need to predict it. It's already a fact.
It's already a fact. Y'all speaking
Why
it
into
even
watch the Oscars? You know.
But I got to bring up Oppenheimer because Oppenheimer has 13 nominations, including Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor, Best Supporting Actress, Best Director, Best Film. I mean, let's talk about this. But before we do, we got to play a clip here. It's Matt Damon as General Leslie Groves and Cillian Murphy as J. Robert Oppenheimer.
You're a dilettante, a womanizer, a suspected communist.
I'm a New Deal Democrat.
I said suspected. Unstable, theatrical, egotistical, neurotic.
Nothing good, no. Not even he's brilliant, but...
Well, brilliance is taken for granted in your circle, so no. Now, the only person who had anything good to say was Richard Tolman. Tolman thinks you have integrity, but he also strikes me as a guy who knows more about science than people.
Yet here you are.
Yet here you are.
Big film. Your reaction to this? 13 nominations, deserving? I did not see this one.
Okay, it's nominated for 13 awards, and if it wins all 13, it will break an Oscar record. That's unlikely because it's probably not going to get everything it's nominated for, but it's going to win probably 7 or 8 statues: Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor for Cillian Murphy, Best Supporting Actor for Robert Downey Jr., Best Cinematography, Best Editing, Best Sound, and Best Original Score.
Deservedly so?
It's a big Hollywood biopic. It's long, which they love to award. If you look at the best actor, best picture winners, they're usually, you know, they don't clock in 90 minutes.
Yeah,
it's prestige. It's all prestige.
It's also you know.
But is it good? I guess is.
I mean, Christopher Nolan or hate him, you cannot doubt the man's craft. And a lot of these award nominations are for the craft of his film. Yeah. And you know, you make a film, and like Greg said, you make a film for IMAX. Of course, like, you know, there is a lot of the honing of the sound, the editing, the picture. So I think it's part and parcel, and that's what I think you mean by prestige.
Yeah, right? But it's also that this film did help generate some box office and bring people back to theaters and create an event. I always think, you know, if I'm going to be voting for the Oscars, what is the costume designer at Fox Studios going to vote for? They're going to go for this, you know. Yeah. It's the responsible choice.
And I want
to
push.
And I do think mediocrity rises to the top with the Oscars, which is why Green Book wins.
And I want to push back because we have an email from Bruce who says Oppenheimer was very overrated.
Yes.
And Bruce says, I'm kind of a film nerd and was super excited to see it on 70mm film, then had an opportunity to see the digital version on a smaller screen with friends. I didn't bother.
Dang. Okay, Bruce. Oh.
Bruce is cold-blooded over there.
Yeah, I mean,
that's between him and Nolan. I mean, okay, so I'd rather not comment here.
I feel like our theme right now is that a lot of the stuff that got nominated, you guys feels a little overrated. So let's talk about something that was nominated that you really actually liked. Mm-hmm. Like, for Christopher really likes American Fiction and Naiad. Either of those two do it for you guys?
Love American Fiction.
I love American
Let's
Fiction.
Let's talk about what it's about real quick.
So it is about, it's a comment on the publishing industry, but also on the larger society about how a black author's book is not quote unquote black enough.
Yeah.
And so just as a prank, he writes a very, very, again, quote unquote black book.
All kinds of stereotypes.
All kinds of stereotypes. And lo and behold, it does very well. And then he's in this moral quandary saying, I don't believe any of this, but this is the first time in my life that a book of mine is successful. They want to make a film out of it and all of those things. And it's I think it's such a beautiful, nuanced look at DEI and what we make of it in today's world. I really like the film.
I work in the publishing industry, and this book is very real. I mean, I've been in those marketing meetings that are depicted in the film. But what I love about American Fiction is that it's a very caustic dissection of race, and it satirizes Hollywood, and it's actually biting the hand that feeds it in the sort of end of the film with how it portrays his book being turned into a film. And it's great that it's going to win the Best Adapted Screenplay Award. And it's literally like saying, okay, this is how you treat us, and yet you're going to now honor us.
But isn't that good that the industry, I guess, can...
I think they're missing the point of what this film is saying.
Really? Really? They're not... It's not that they're being, you know, self-reflective. You think they're just missing the point?
And by the way, let's just center you in this. Here's a clip featuring Jeffrey Wright as Thelonious Monk Ellison, who finds his book in the, quote, African-American aisle and talks to the bookstore employee about that. Take a listen.
Been there.
Wait a minute. Why are these books here?
I'm not sure. I would imagine that this author, Ellison, is black.
That's me. Ellison.
Yeah. He is me, and he and I are black.
Oh, bingo.
No bingo, Ned. These books have nothing to do with African-American studies. They're just literature. The blackest thing about this one is the ink.
And of course, Gary, that's before he goes and sort of changes his tack with this joke book that ends up becoming a huge success.
And we got to shout out Philadelphia's own Erica Alexander, who plays his love interest in American Fiction.
Not nominated. But maybe should have been.
But they got five nominations for us.
And Sterling K. Brown got nominated. He's great. Jeffrey Rush is great. I'm so gratified to see Jeffrey Rush getting acknowledged for his performance here, because he's given great performances throughout the years, and it's always like Coleman Domingo. It's great to see him getting some recognition as a sort of a character actor who's got a great juicy leading role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Should we talk briefly about maybe a film that should have gotten more love from the Academy that didn't? Daughtry, you want to start us off?
Yes, it's called May December.
May December.
Okay, so, I saw that
so
one.
So this is an adaptation of the Mary Kay Letourneau story.
Yes.
Talk briefly about what it's about and what you liked about it.
To talk very briefly about it, it is about a much older woman who is incarcerated because she ends up having sex with a much younger man and has her
teenager.
Yeah. And has her child and claims to be quote unquote in love with him, and both of them say they're in love with each other, and then once she's out they get married. And Natalie Portman plays an actress in the film who is acting in an indie film about this case.
Movie making within a movie type
exactly.
of thing, sort of
and,
a Russian nesting doll type of idea.
And Julianne Moore is the other actress.
They were good together.
Both of them to talk about chemistry, you know, it's fantastic. And I thought they would both get nominations. In fact, when I watched it, I was like, who are they going to do best actress and who are they going to put for best supporting actress?
Yeah.
And then neither. And sticking to May December, Charles Melton, who we've seen in Riverdale before, is a fantastic actor. Who again, like, you know, there's so much that he says without verbal dialogue acting, and to not see him on the list is also, I think, a miss. And I would also, and I think Greg would agree with me, another person who should have been up there in the Best Actor nominees is Gael Garcia Bernal for playing Cassandro in Roger Ross Williams, is also from Philly area, in Roger's film Cassandro.
Yeah, I love May December. It's a puzzle. It's about truth and lies. It prompts viewers to recalibrate things almost every scene. It's not unlike Anatomy of a Fall, which is also nominated. May December did get a screenplay nomination. It doesn't have a chance, though, because Anatomy of a Fall
is
going
to win. You're so confident, Gary. I love your confidence.
You are, Gary's like that.
Anatomy of a Fall is the favorite to win Best Original Screenplay. It's masterful. It has the best marital spat ever committed to film. It's about this murder
that might be a suicide, that might be a murder in like an alpine village, right?
The Sandra Hüller, who gives a phenomenal performance and really should win Best Actress but won't.
Yeah, if that was justice in the world, I think she would.
and we got to mention Barbie because it was such a big film. Greta Garwig, no Best Actor, Best Director,
Margot Robbie did not get Best Actress,
And Margot Robbie didn't get the nod.
It's only going to win Best Song.
That song, which
it's the only thing it's going to win.
I would not be sad if it also won production design, because none of that was CGI.
I think Poor Things is going to get past costume and production design, which are the only two things. I mean, Barbie could squeak in an upset in either of those categories, but I think it's Poor Things because that's like just over the top.
And I got to throw in another one that got 10 Oscar nominations: Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yes.
Quick, what were your guys' thoughts on that? Because it's big names: Scorsese, DiCaprio, De Niro.
DiCaprio, who did not get the nomination.
Yeah, Lily Gladstone, was getting a ton of love for her role.
She
should
be.
Real quick, Daughtry, take us out here and what you thought of Killers of the Flower Moon.
Well, I mean, first things first, I think it was a bit too long. and you know, there's an argument that it's for world building. You needed all that hours. But we've seen that world before. You know, it didn't need to be built so much. But I think, speaking of Lily Gladstone, I think she should win because, again, she has such a small role in the film. And she doesn't say much, but just the way she acts and carries herself in the film.
I think
her presence. And again, like, you know, even when she's not in the scene, people are talking about her and referring to her.
So many women with nominations, by the way, 30%.
All deserved, yes.
All deserved, great.
Thank you both. That's Bedatri Chowdhury, Philadelphia Inquirer Arts and Entertainment Editor, and Gary Kramer, Philadelphia Gay News and Salon.com Film Critic. Thanks to you both for being here.
Thank you.
It was a lot of fun. The Oscars are on Sunday at 7 p.m. on 6ABC.
Mm-hmm.
And this is it for Studio 2 this week.
Yeah. I want to say thank you to our award-winning producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Charlie Kyer engineered today's show. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arens. We love you, Paige. We love you, Paige.
We love you.
This is Studio 2 in Philadelphia.